Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, June 29th. I'm your reader, Dagna, and I'll be reading Tri-State News and Siouxland News. And we will begin with the mini editorial, which today is written by Tim Botero of Sioux City. And Tim writes, "Let me get this straight. Governor Reynolds turned down a humanitarian request for housing immigrant children in Iowa. Then she announces she is going to send Iowa State Troopers to the border at the request of Texas Governor Abbott. A purely political stunt. Oh, the hypocrisy of Christian conservatives. Lord God, save us from our governor and the GOP." Again, this was the opinion and written by Tim Botero of Sioux City. Our first front page story is from the Sioux City Council meeting. And the headline is, "Council okays developers' applications for housing tax credits, assesses hotel for skywalk bills." The Sioux City Council green-lighted a resolution Monday supporting two Sioux City developers' applications for financial assistance to help address the shortage of housing for new workers. By approving its consent agenda, the council voted in favor of Rick Bertrand of Bertrand Construction, LLC, and David Hegarty of Roy Dave, LLC, submitting Iowa Economic Development Authority applications for the Workforce Housing Tax Credit Program, also known as the WHTC. The goal of the WHTC program is to spur new housing growth that will help address the state's pending workforce shortage. The program provides a transferable investment tax credit of up to $15,000 per unit, as well as a refund of sales and use tax paid on the project, up to $1 million per project. Before the vote, Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore said the projects are steps in the right direction to alleviate the city's housing shortage. "I just want to congratulate them and thank them for developing," Moore said. "Thanks to those two projects for increasing our housing." Bertrand Construction plans to submit an application for funding to assist with the construction of 14 single-family homes on Addison Circle near the 2800 block of Floyd Boulevard on the city's north side. Bertrand Construction plans to invest $2.8 million in the project and is applying to the WHTC program for a combined total of $350,000 in investment credits and sales tax refunds. Roy Dave is applying for funding to build 18 residential townhouse units near 1501 334th Street, which is also on the city's north side. Roy Dave plans to invest roughly $3.6 million in the project and is applying to the WHTC program for a combined $480,000 in investment tax credits and sales tax refunds. In other action at the City Council, 3 months' worth of past due skywalk bills will be assessed to the Sioux City Hotel and Conference Center. By voting to approve its consent agenda, the Council also passed a resolution that will allow the City to recover skywalk charges for the months of January, February, and March from CSC Hospitality, LLC, owner of the hotel at 707 4th Street. The hotel's current unpaid balance is $19,749.04, with $15,214.59 as past due. CSC Hospitality purchased the former Howard Johnson Hotel in January of 2019 for $4.5 million, with hopes of renovating the 12-story structure and eventually flying the flag of a national hotel chain. Our next story is headlined, "Steve King Copyright Lawsuit Transferred to Iowa Court." A copyright infringement lawsuit filed against the former U.S. Representative Steve King by the mother of the Success Kid boy in a popular online meme has been transferred to an Iowa federal court. The case was received in U.S. District Court in Sioux City on Wednesday after a federal judge in the District of Columbia approved a joint motion to have the case moved from the court there to the Northern District of Iowa, where King of Kyron lives. King on Monday called the lawsuit a politically motivated hit. "It's a suit full of disparaging insults," he said. "I'm going to defend my reputation." Lanny Griner and Sam Griner in December sued King, his King for Congress campaign and others yet to be identified for copyright infringement and unauthorized use of a likeness for posting the Success Kid meme in a fundraising ad on King's Facebook and campaign pages in January of 2020. King at the time was running for re-election in Iowa's 4th District. He would lose in the June Republican primary election to Randy Feenstra, who was elected to King's seat in November. Shortly after the photo was posted on King's sites in his Fund Our Memes online campaign, Lainey Griner took to social media, gaining national media attention for her demand that King remove the photo. The Jacksonville, Florida woman said she was opposed to the conservative Republican's political views and remarks, which she called racist, and never would have granted him permission to use her son's photo. Lainey and Sam were both horrified to learn that defendants had used Lainey's photograph of Sam and Sam's likeness as campaign propaganda for King, someone whose statements and beliefs they find abhorrent, the lawsuit said. King said he was unaware that his campaign staff had used the photo, and it was removed immediately after Griner contacted the campaign, accompanied with a statement that they used the photo inadvertently. King said he believed the issue was settled until he was notified of the lawsuit. "It was a bit of a surprise they sued," he said. The photo of the young boy with the clenched fist and determined look on his face became a popular internet meme years ago. Lainey Griner registered the photo's copyright in February of 2012. It has been licensed commercially for advertisements by Coca-Cola, General Mills, Microsoft, and others. Griner and her son are seeking damages of at least $75,000 plus punitive damages. No hearings are currently scheduled. And then our next story is headlined, Sioux City School Superintendent Contract Extension Acknowledged. The Sioux City School Board took a vote Monday to acknowledge the continuation of Superintendent Paul Gausman's contract. During a special meeting on Monday, the board voted 4-3 to acknowledge the automatic one-year extension of Gausman's contract. Board members Jeremy Saint, Ron Colling, Julie Albert, and Perla Alicorn Flory voted in favor of the automatic extension. Monique Scarlett, Dan Greenwell, and Taylor Goodwin voted against. The board in recent years has annually approved a series of rolling three-year contracts with one additional year extending the expiration date each time. With the current contract, Gausman's base salary is $248,645.95. His contract was renewed in 2020 with a 2.25% raise in his pay and benefits package. The contract covers 3 years, running through 2022-23. Director Dan Greenwell said after asking multiple times to have a discussion regarding the superintendent contract, similar to one last year, it was denied. He said the board of directors was effectively forced to approve a contract without discussion. Scarlett said the entire board is responsible for the expiring time for the automatic renewal discussion. Many times, the yearly approval includes a pay raise. No pay raise was discussed during the Monday night meeting. Board President Perla Alicorn Flory said the annual pay raise discussion is scheduled for July. In 2019, his contract extension included a nearly 2% raise in salary, setting his annual pay to $243,175 for 2019-20. In July 2018, with the Sioux City District facing tight finances, the school board accepted Gausman's recommendation to keep his annual salary at $238,523 for the 2018-19 school year. Our next headline is ex-South Sioux City coach pleads not guilty to sexual assault. Dakota City. A former South Sioux City High School assistant football coach has pleaded not guilty of sexually assaulting a high school student. Nathan Rogers, 25, waived his personal appearance for arraignment, which was scheduled for Tuesday, and entered a written plea Friday in Dakota County District Court to charges of first-degree sexual assault of a child, generating a visual depiction of sexually explicit conduct, possession of a visual depiction of sexually explicit conduct, first-degree sexual assault by a school employee, child abuse, and enticement by electronic communication device. No trial date has been set. District Judge Brian Meisner scheduled a pre-trial conference for July 27th. Rogers is charged with having sex with a high school student who told investigators she had begun a relationship with Rogers in 2019 when she was a South Sioux City High School freshman. According to court documents, the two had sex numerous times when she was 15 and after she turned 16 earlier this year. The two also exchanged nude photos of themselves on their cell phones. Investigators became aware of the relationship after discovering photos and videos on Rogers' cell phone while reviewing its contents during an investigation into the alleged assault of another girl. Rogers has pleaded not guilty of first-degree sexual assault of a child and child abuse for the alleged sexual assault of that 15-year-old girl at his home in December. According to court documents, Rogers told investigators the sex was consensual. Rogers, who had served as the football team's receivers and defensive backs coach, was fired March 3rd after the first girl reported the alleged assault to a school employee. A 2013 South Sioux City graduate and an all-state football and basketball player, Rogers remains in custody on a $1.5 million bond. Our next headline is ex-principal appeals ruling dismissing sex discrimination suit. Sioux City. A former Sioux City Elementary School principal has appealed a judge's ruling that dismissed a sex discrimination lawsuit she had filed against the Sioux City Community School District and top administrators. Dawn Stansberry filed notice on Wednesday that she will appeal District Judge Dwayne Hoffmeyer's ruling granting the district summary judgment to the Iowa Supreme Court. Hoffmeyer dismissed Stansberry's lawsuit on May 25th after ruling that there was insufficient evidence to show that the district's intentions to transfer her from her position as Morningside Elementary School principal to an assistant principal's position at East Middle School was motivated by sexual discrimination. Stansberry, who had been an elementary principal in the district since 2005, resigned in August 2018 after she said she was given an ultimatum at District Superintendent Paul Gausman's direction to be demoted to the middle school position or be fired. She said that the Director of Elementary Education, Brian Burnite, her direct supervisor, told her that as long as Gausman was superintendent, she would never receive a promotion, cost of living adjustments, or salary increases. Stansberry sued the district, Gausman, Burnite, and Associate Superintendent Kim Burinek in February of 2019 for sex and age discrimination, breach of contract, and other claims. All claims except the sex discrimination allegation were later dismissed. Burnite placed Stansberry on a plan of awareness in March 2017 because Morningside Elementary School's reading scores were not high enough. Stansberry said in the lawsuit, though male principals at two other schools that had lower scores were not disciplined. She said that two teachers on the panel to interview her replacement told her that Burnite had said a man could do the job better. One of those teachers denied saying that to Stansberry during a deposition. The other teacher said she couldn't remember telling her. The district presented a performance evaluation that rated her performance as needs improvements on culture and climate, and it wished to transfer her to East Middle so she could improve, and also because of concerns of favoritism voiced by some of her elementary staff members. Stansberry said she had scored better in previous evaluations and that Burnite had fraudulently prepared the final evaluation because she was not informed nor asked to participate. It also was not placed in her personnel file, she said. Hoffmeyer said in his ruling his duty was not to assess the district's decision to transfer her, but whether it was motivated by sex discrimination. Based on depositions and testimony, Hoffmeyer said he could not find sufficient evidence to support her claim. Two arrested following high-speed pursuit in Plymouth County. Two people were arrested following a vehicle and on-foot pursuit that occurred in Plymouth County on Sunday. The Plymouth County Sheriff's Office reported a deputy tried to stop a northbound vehicle that was speeding in excess of 100 miles per hour near the intersection of K-22 and Lone Tree Road. The vehicle reportedly failed to stop for emergency lights and sirens on K-22, coming into the north intersection of K-22 and Highway 3, before continuing west on Highway 3 toward Akron, Iowa. At the intersection of Highway 3 and Highway 12, the fleeing vehicle lost control, striking the railroad tracks on the west side of the intersection and coming to a stop. The driver then exited the vehicle and was apprehended following a short foot pursuit. The passenger remained in the vehicle and was detained. Sean E. Denny, 52, of Sioux City, was charged with operating while intoxicated, first offense, a serious misdemeanor, eluding with injury, Class D felony, carrying a dangerous weapon, a knife, with a blade exceeding 5 inches, a serious misdemeanor, and driving while barred, a aggravated misdemeanor. Denny was also arrested on 2 outstanding Woodbury County arrest warrants. One was for being in possession of a controlled substance, meth, second offense, and the second warrant was for violating a pretrial release for a controlled substance violation, carrying a dangerous weapon, and being in possession of a controlled substance, first offense. Nelita Taylor, 40, of Ireton, Iowa, was charged with driving while barred, an aggravated misdemeanor, and carrying a dangerous weapon, a serious misdemeanor. She was also arrested on 2 outstanding warrants from Dakota County, Nebraska, for criminal impersonation and failure to appear on bail. Due to the accident, both Denny and Taylor were transferred to Haywarden Hospital by the Akron Ambulance. After being treated for their injuries and released from the hospital, they were arrested and transported to the Plymouth County Jail. Board finalizes contract for Woodbury County Jail. A joint county-city board on Monday finalized a contract with Hausman Construction for the new Woodbury County Law Enforcement Center. The Law Enforcement Authority also set a groundbreaking ceremony for the project at 1 p.m. September 15th. Authority Chair Ron Week said the dirt work at the site is estimated to be complete by August 1st. The authority decided to give Hausman a month to create a gravel driveway and put up fencing before the ceremony. The $58.4 million project is estimated to take 20 months to complete. On June 14th, the authority unanimously approved Hausman's low bid for the main phase of construction, despite the $58.39 million price tag coming in about $15 million above previous estimates, and uncertainty over whether the county could tap its share of federal COVID relief funds to help close the gap. Sioux City-based W.A. Klinger Construction was the only other bidder at $59.3 million. Kenny Schmitz, the County Building Service Director, and Shane Albrecht of the Baker Group presented information and research regarding Lincoln, Nebraska-based Hausman Construction and the Quality Assurance Questionnaire during the authority's meeting Monday afternoon. Schmitz and Albrecht said they believed Hausman is a responsible bidder for the project after researching the company. Hausman has never been suspended from a project. It has not been disqualified from bidding on a project in the last 3 years. It has never had a claim against its bonds, and it has never failed to complete work, and it has done many projects over $50 million. Hausman has one serious Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, violation from 2019 that resulted in a fatality. Hausman has 4 pending lawsuits according to the public records. 2 of the suits were filed by Hausman, and the other 2 were filed against Hausman. One of the lawsuits against Hausman is a subcontractor claiming Hausman has failed to pay them $311,909. Bronson man pleads not guilty of kidnapping woman. A Bronson, Iowa man accused of using homemade chloroform to abduct his ex-girlfriend has pleaded not guilty to kidnapping and other charges. Zach Smith, 20, entered his written plea Monday in Woodbury County District Court to charges of third-degree kidnapping, assault while participating in a felony, and assault with intent to commit sexual abuse. Trial was scheduled for August 17. He remains in custody on a $250,000 bond. Smith is charged with hiding in the South Sioux City woman's vehicle on June 3rd, displaying an airsoft pistol to her and forcing her into his vehicle, where he blindfolded her, bound her with zip ties and duct tape, and rendered her unconscious with homemade chloroform. The victim told investigators that she awakened alone in a shed at Smith's home in rural Bronson and was able to escape. She was found at a rural Woodbury County intersection by family members who were looking for her. Investigators found Smith in possession of a backpack containing condoms, lubrication, ropes, ties, and duct tape. Smith told investigators he had used items in the backpack during the abduction and had been planning the kidnapping for more than 2 weeks, court documents said. Sneaky's Chicken raises funds for Hope Street. Dave Ferris, owner of Sneaky's Chicken, holds a check Sunday night for Hope Street of Siouxland. The fundraiser, which drew hundreds of from around the area, brought in more than $215,000 for Hope Street, a nonprofit designed to help homeless people get into the workplace, as a way to celebrate his restaurant's 42nd birthday. Ferris organized an event at Country Celebrations, which featured food, an auction, and live bands. 2 years ago, the family business hosted a similar fundraiser for the warming shelter. Man sentenced to 10 years for sex abuse. Storm Lake. A Storm Lake man was sentenced Monday to 10 years in prison for having sex with a 15-year-old girl. Nixon Mendoza Munez, 23, pleaded guilty in April in Buena Vista County District Court to one count of third-degree sexual abuse. District Judge Shane Mayer also ordered Mendoza Munez to serve a lifetime special sex offender sentence in which he will be on parole after completing his prison sentence. If he were to violate terms of the special sentence, he could be sent back to prison. Four other counts of third-degree sexual abuse were dismissed as part of the plea agreement. Mendoza Munez met the girl, who was from Storm Lake, through a social media site. He was accused of having sex with her at homes in Storm Lake between December 9th and 29. One killed in Yankton County crash. One person was killed Sunday in a single vehicle crash east of Volan, South Dakota. The South Dakota Department of Public Safety said the 61-year-old man was thrown from a Hummer H2 that had left the road and rolled. The victim's name has not been released. The driver was eastbound on Bluff Road near the intersection with 452nd Avenue when the Hummer entered the north ditch and rolled. The driver, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene. Fugitive arrested on Sioux City's west side. A Siouxland fugitive is back in custody. Todd Sassman of the U.S. Marshals Service Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force said in an email Monday that Anthony Buchanan was arrested in Sioux City on June 17th. Buchanan, 29, was wanted by the 3rd Judicial District Parole Office for violation of his parole. He was on parole for possession of a firearm by a prohibited person. According to Sassman, a citizen reported that Buchanan was in the 1600 block of West 4th Street. When Sioux City police got there, he said Buchanan ran on foot. Buchanan was located in the area of West 14th and Ross Streets, hiding in some bushes next to a residence. Sassman said he was taken into custody without incident. Siouxland man sought by Fugitive Task Force. The U.S. Marshals Service Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force is seeking the public's assistance in locating the following person: Brian Laster Julag, 19. He is 5'4" tall and weighs 148 pounds. Lassiter Julag is wanted on warrants issued in Woodbury County for second and third degree sexual abuse. Anyone with information can contact the U.S. Marshals Services at 712-252-0211 or siouxlands.mostwanted@usdoj.gov. Now, a Nebraska story. Staffing emergency prompts longer shifts at two prisons. Employees at two Nebraska prisons will have to work longer shifts and may be asked to clock in at a facility where they do not normally work to compensate for staffing shortages, the state corrections director announced on Monday. Director Scott Frack said he has declared a staffing emergency at the Lincoln Correctional Center and the Diagnostic Evaluation Center, located next to each other in Lincoln. Prison officials will implement 12-hour shifts for some employees, up from the usual 8. In a press release, FRAC said there will be situations where staff members will be asked to work in the opposite facility. In essence, the facilities will coordinate together. FRAC said the move was driven largely by a slowdown in hiring, similar to what employees have faced with the tight labor market in Nebraska and nationally. Nebraska's Corrections Department has struggled for years to hire and retain staff members, a problem union officials have said is caused by higher-paying jobs in county prisons and tough working conditions. The Diagnostic Evaluation Center is the intake facility for all adult males entering the state prison system. The Lincoln Correctional Center is a maximum security male facility with housing for residential mental health services. Construction is underway to connect the two facilities. Two larger state prisons, the Nebraska State Penitentiary and the Tecumseh State Correctional Institution, have operated with 12-hour shifts since 2019 to address similar staffing shortages. Nebraska virus emergency to end despite rural vaccination lag. Nebraska will formally end its coronavirus emergency this week, Governor Pete Ricketts said on Monday, even though rural parts of the state continue to lag larger cities in vaccinations. Ricketts said he will let the state's current virus emergency expire as scheduled on Wednesday, along with its remaining social distancing guidelines that were made mandatory earlier in the pandemic. He said he also expects all schools to be open for in-person learning this fall without imposing any mask or vaccination requirements. We need to get back to normal, he said in a news conference. His comments came as the number of virus-related hospitalizations dropped to 27 on Sunday after more than a month of decline. Still, Nebraska continues to show a wide disparity in vaccination rates between urban and rural areas. In Lancaster County, encompassing Lincoln, more than 52% of the population is fully vaccinated, according to the state's coronavirus dashboard. But in the rural, overwhelmingly conservative panhandle, the proportion is 31%. In Sioux County, on Nebraska's northwestern border, less than 19% of the population has been fully vaccinated. Ricketts said he has repeatedly urged Nebraska residents to get vaccinated and asked questions of public health officials to address any concerns. But some residents have longer distances to travel and may not have time to fit it into their schedules. State health officials have also said vaccine hesitancy is a challenge because some rural residents don't trust the vaccine or don't believe the virus is a serious health concern. Others may be relying on the fact that their area is so remote, offering sporadic contact with others and thus reducing the risk of transmission. It's frustrating because we want to get as many people vaccinated as we can, said Kim Engel, director of the Panhandle Public Health District in western Nebraska. We have plenty of resources and everyone out here is probably within an hour of some place where they can get vaccinated. It's just a matter of people deciding whether they want to get vaccinated or not. Nebraska will also end its multimillion-dollar no-bid contract with Test Nebraska, a service the state offered to provide drive-up tests through the pandemic. The contract with Utah-based Nomi Health has faced some criticism from state lawmakers because it was approved quickly with no other bids. Ricketts has defended the vendor, saying it provided rapid, convenient testing when the state needed it. Test Nebraska will continue to offer tests until July 18th, and the contract will expire July 31st. Nebraska High Court lets abused Guatemalan mother keep kids. The Nebraska Supreme Court on Friday ruled that a Guatemalan mother who fled her home country and Nebraska to escape abusive men can keep her children. The court ruled unanimously for the mother, known as Juana L., the Omaha Journal-World reported. She became pregnant with her first child in Guatemala when she was 12, according to court testimony. The father abandoned her. Juana later moved to live with her grandmother, where she was raped and became pregnant again. She then fled to Nebraska, where her parents lived. But she continued to face abuse in Norfolk. She became pregnant a third time by a sexually and physically abusive boyfriend who also hurt her children. She was reported to the Health and Human Services Department for leaving her 4- and 2-year-old sons at her Norfolk home alone while taking her baby to the doctor. She later fled to Minnesota to escape her abusive boyfriend without notifying the agency. When Juana was arrested for using fake identification to get a job, the Madison County Attorney's Office tried to take away her children. She was granted asylum and released from custody in 2020. The court ruled that Juana's criminal offenses don't make her an unfit mother and that she is unlikely to re-offend. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, June 29th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now turn to today's obituaries. Our first one, Keith M. Oostenbrug, and that's spelled Oostenbrug, Spirit Lake, Iowa, 85, died Sunday, June 27th. Services will be July 1st at 10 a.m. at the Spirit Lake United Methodist Church. Burial will be at a later date at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Sioux City. Visitation will be June 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Schuert Lentz Funeral Home in Spirit Lake. Larry Alfred Ahlers, Rosalie, Nebraska, 78, died Saturday, June 26. Services will be July 1st at 10 a.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Walt Hill, Nebraska. Burial will be at the Bancroft Cemetery in Bancroft, Nebraska. Visitation will be June 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Munderlow Smith Funeral Home in Pender, Nebraska. Leo Clemens Freaking, Hospers, Iowa, 84, died Saturday, June 26. Services will be June 30th at 10:30 a.m. at the St. Anthony Catholic Church in Hospers. Burial will be after the service at the St. Anthony Catholic Cemetery Hospers with military honors. Visitation will be June 29th, which is today, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the church and resuming 1 hour prior to service time. Arrangements with the Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Joanne Harders, Hartley, Iowa, 73, died Sunday, June 27th. Services will be July 1st at 10:30 a.m. at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Hartley. Burial will be at the Pleasant View Cemetery, Hartley. Visitation will be June 30th from 2 to 7 p.m. at Hartley Funeral Home in Hartley. James M. Weasel Frankel, Sioux City, 71, died Sunday, June 27th. Services will be July 1st at 11 a.m. at the Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Burial will be the Iowa Veterans Cemetery. Visitation will be July 1st from 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Dorothy D. Amick, Sioux City, 96, died Friday, June 25th. Services will be July 1st at 11 a.m. at Grace United Methodist Church. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation is July 1st from 9 a.m. until service time at the church. Arrangements with the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Raymond Harlan Erickson, 77, of Jefferson, South Dakota, passed away Saturday, June 26, at a local hospital due to health complications. Services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday at Hanson Funeral Home in Vermilion, South Dakota. Pastor Jim Fowler will be officiating the service. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 11 a.m., with family present at 10 a.m. Burial will be at the Pleasant Hill Cemetery in Utica, South Dakota. Condolences may be made at www.hansonfuneralhome.com. Raymond was born December 22, 1943, to William R. and Alma M. Erickson at home in Yankton County, South Dakota. He was the youngest of 9 children. Raymond attended school in the Irene, Centerville, South Dakota area. He enlisted in the United States Navy on August 30, 1962, and was discharged on September 30, 1966. In 1965, he received a Vietnam Medal. Between 1966 and 1967, he moved to Australia. That is where he met and married the love of his life, Catherine Pat Erickson, on May 25, 1968, in Sydney, Australia. In June 1970, they moved back to the United States and lived a short time in Canton, South Dakota. In 1972, they moved to Jefferson, where he lived for the remainder of his life. From 1970 to 1986, he worked at Lode King, or IBP. He was unable to work for 4 years due to medical issues. In 1990, he returned to work and worked around the Siouxland areas. He eventually retired from Walmart in Sioux City. He also enjoyed tinkering around the house and yard. He has also enjoyed spending time with his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren when able to. Memorials can be sent to Raymond Erickson Medical Fund at Vermilion Federal Credit Union in Vermilion. LaDon Mott, 60, of Lamars, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, June 23rd at a Sioux City hospital surrounded by his loving family. Services will be 2 p.m. today at Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. The Reverend Christian Meyer from St. John's Lutheran Church in Lamars will officiate. Burial will follow in Memorial Cemetery in Lamars. Visitation with the family present was held 5 to 7 p.m. Monday at the funeral home. Visitation will resume at 1 p.m. until service time today at the funeral home. Expressions of sympathy can be extended to the family through rexwinklefh.com. LaDon Robert Mott was born March 23, 1961, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, the son of Donald and Virginia Hanson Mott. He lived a short time in Canton, South Dakota, before moving to Brunswick, Iowa, and later Seney, Iowa. He attended school in Lamars and graduated from Lamars Community High School in 1980. Following high school, LaDon began working in construction. He was united in marriage to Carla Huseman on March 15, 1986, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Lamars. They made their home in Lamars. LaDon continued working in construction until retiring due to his health. LaDon volunteered with the Plymouth County Disaster Services for many years. LaDon did not let his health and mobility slow him down. He was exceptionally good with his hands and could create many things out of nothing. Recently, he enjoyed making and smoking pipes. He enjoyed presenting many videos on YouTube on the things he created. In his earlier years, he enjoyed fishing and hunting. He also enjoyed ham radio using his call sign of KCOAX for many years. His most important thing in life was his family, especially his children and grandchildren. And that concludes the obituaries for today. We'll now do another Nebraska story. The headline is Lincoln Mayor Names City's First LGBTQ Police Chief. A high-ranking California police official was nominated Monday to serve as the next police chief in Lincoln, Nebraska, making her the city's first female chief and the first who is openly gay. Mayor Lerion Gaylor Baird said she has selected Teresa Ewens, a 55-year-old commander with the San Francisco Police Department. Ewens was one of four finalists who was chosen from a field of 31 applicants. If the Lincoln City Council approves her as expected, Ewens would assume the role on August 31st. During her visit to Lincoln last week, Teresa articulated a vision that connected with the stakeholders in the search process, Gaylor Baird said at a news conference. I heard from street officers, command staff, and community members, all of whom expressed their belief that she is the right leader for the Lincoln Police Department. Gaylor Baird said Ewens showed a commitment to the priorities outlined in the city search process, including community policing, support for on-the-ground officers, an emphasis on diversity in the department, and accountability and transparency. She said Ewens also selected for her record of leadership, communication skills, and humility. The appointment comes a year after the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Floyd's death led to protests and rioting nationwide and in Lincoln, the second largest city in Nebraska, with a population of about 289,000 and more than 350 sworn police officers. Ewan has served in the San Francisco Police Department since 1994 in a variety of roles, including the agency's Field Operations Bureau, Investigations Bureau, and Special Operations Bureau. As the commander of the Field Operations Bureau, she oversaw five of the city's 10 district stations in downtown San Francisco, with about 900 sworn members. She also worked within the department to develop policies designed to minimize bias in policing. Ewens also won the endorsement of the city's police union, which said in a statement that Ewens stood above the rest of the field and urged Gaylor Baird to nominate her. Ewens will replace Jeff Blymeister, who left in January to take a private sector job, and Brian Jackson, who has been serving as the city's acting police chief. We'll now move to the sports section, and we have an opinion piece to begin with, and it's headlined, Create Uniform Policies for NCAA Athletes to Share Cash. The U.S. Supreme Court last week served notice to the NCAA that it is not above the law and that business as usual is ending. The justices, in a 9-0 majority ruling and a concurring opinion from Associate Justice Brett Kavanaugh, said that the collegiate sports governing body could not restrict student athletes' education-related benefits, such as computers, graduate scholarships, and overseas study. While the ruling was narrow in strict terms, the unanimous vote and the rhetoric of the opinion suggest that the justices would be inclined to rule in favor of students on bigger questions, such as seeking compensation for use of their name, image, or likeness. What that means is that student athletes could get a cut from such things as jersey sales bearing their name, social media and other endorsements, and personal appearances. For example, price-fixing labor is price-fixing labor, Kavanaugh wrote. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate, he wrote. And under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. The language will encourage those who want athletes to get a share of the money generated by college sports, mainly from top football programs. It would not be a surprise to see future plaintiffs, including direct quotes from his opinion, said Michael A. Carrier, a professor at Rutgers Law School. The free labor of college football players enables coaches and athletic directors to be paid millions. It supports other sports at schools and in that way subsidizes Olympic development and other elements of the amazingly lucrative American sports ecosystem. For example, nearly all players on the U.S. women's soccer team attended top-level schools whose coaches' salaries are covered by strong football and/or basketball programs. TV networks that cut deals with the NCAA and athletic conferences are watching with an eye toward new opportunities, which are likely to favor the most successful schools and leave the others running even harder to catch up. Under current NCAA policy, students cannot be paid, and the scholarship money colleges can offer is capped at the cost of attending the school. The NCAA is struggling to come up with a name, image, likeness policy, as several states, including Nebraska, have passed laws establishing their own rules. We do believe that it is only fair to say Adrian Martinez or Lexi Sun to be able to make money on jerseys, endorsements, and appearances. Nebraska quarterbacks and volleyball players are good examples of athletes whose peak of popularity and marketability comes during college, when they help float the entire athletic department. The NCAA wants Congress to set rules, and we would all like Congress to be able to function, but in this case, the NCAA cannot get away with trying to pass the buck. It would like to avoid further litigation, but that's just not going to happen in modern America. So rather than waiting for a court ruling that could throw out current restrictions without setting new rules, setting up a hodgepodge of rules under various state laws and individual university policies, the NCAA must take responsibility. The NCAA is considered likely for the short term to issue only broad guidelines and let schools police themselves and try to keep things in the spirit of the rules. Athletes may be able to go out and drum up their own side deals, but brand building is a lot of work. The University of Nebraska-Lincoln is ahead of the game in terms of setting up a structure to help its athletes, which will become essential for schools that want to be competitive at a high level. And that points to both the need for a uniform policy and potential downsides. Schools lagging in athletic success and exposure will be at an even greater recruiting disadvantage. They will be under tremendous pressure to set up marketing programs for their athletes. Some may drop football, putting at risk other sports, and particularly women's sports, which benefit from Title IX's requirement that schools offer equal number of scholarships to women as men. The transfer portal, already puncturing the traditional feel of college sports by allowing easy movement from school to school, will be even fuller as the student athletes shop around for better deals. To be as fair as possible and to minimize the inevitable effect on competitive imbalance, the NCAA must adopt a comprehensive approach and move into the future. And this was an opinion piece from the Omaha World Herald. I'll now move to a story on the sports section about the Sioux City Explorers. And the headline is, "I just love playing here. Ex's closer Matt Poboreko is dominating the competition." And I'm not sure if I'm saying the name right. His name is spelled P-O-B-E-R-E-Y-K-O. Poboreko. Okay. "There are few sure things in baseball. Matt Poboreko has been close. With a mid-90s fastball and a forkball that often leaves opposing batters flailing at the wind, the 29-year-old Sioux City Explorers closer has been nearly perfect late in games this season. In 17 games, Poboreko has compiled an American Association best 11 saves with 30 total strikeouts and 2 walks while allowing just 2 earned runs on the year. With numbers like that, Poboreko has earned the favor of Explorers manager Steve Montgomery. For any skipper, having a lockdown closer makes managing a lot easier. It really shortens the game," Montgomery said. "He's a guy that doesn't necessarily have to pitch the ninth, too. He has gone a few 4 or 5 out saves for us as well. When you have someone like that, it shortens the game for you and it allows you to manage a little differently early in the game." Poboreko has played in many different places in his career. After recovering from Tommy John surgery in college, Poboreko dominated in his senior season at Kentucky Wesleyan University, putting up a 1.96 ERA with 104 strikeouts in 73 and a third innings as a starter. After college, Poboreko spent some time as a pitching coach with the Northwest, with the Northwest Indiana Oilmen of the Midwest Collegiate League and pitched for the Florence Freedom in the Independent Frontier League before eventually signing with the Arizona Diamondbacks organization as a free agent. Poboreko put up a 4.33 ERA across 3 levels of minor league ball for the Diamondbacks and was released after the 2016 season. He then hooked on with the New York Mets organization, where he made it as high as AAA Las Vegas before being released in March of 2019. After being let go by the Mets, Poboreko signed with Explorers, where he quickly became a fan favorite. In 47 appearances in 2019, he put up a 3.18 ERA with 74 strikeouts and 14 walks. Poboreko also tied a Sioux City record with 24 saves and was named an American Association All-Star. In 2020, Poboreko played for the St. Paul Saints and Estrellas de Orante in the Dominican Republic. After a season away, he is glad to be back in an Explorers uniform. "This is where I've had the most fun playing," Poboreko said. "Obviously, with the coaching staff and everything, this was a no-doubter for me to come back. I tried Mexico for a little bit. It just wasn't for me. Just the guys here, the guys in the clubhouse, and the guys in the manager's office. I just love playing here." Montgomery describes his closer as a jokester, someone who is always game to pull pranks on his teammates and isn't afraid to speak his mind in the clubhouse. "He is not afraid to say anything to anybody," Montgomery said. "Maybe that is because of the numbers he is putting up, but he is a guy who just likes to keep things loose. He likes to have fun, and he likes to joke around. But in the ninth inning, he takes it very seriously. He knows what the job is, and he does it very well." According to Poboreko, his success this season is due to his improved command and ultra-low walk rate. "Things just click at a certain point," he said. "You put in work in the off season. You work on locating better, and everything has just clicked this year. I've never been a super high walks guy, but it's way down this year, and I think that is really helping me." One of the things that makes Poboreco unique as a pitcher is his reliance on the forkball. The pitch has fallen out of favor in baseball in recent years due to a perception that it can cause damage to a pitcher's elbow or shoulder. But since batters seldom see it in games, the forkball can be an extremely effective pitch when thrown well. Through the first 5 weeks of the season, it has been close to unhittable for Poboreco. "He knows how to get through a lineup," Montgomery said. "He knows who he wants to let hurt him and who he doesn't want to let hurt him, and he kind of pitches to his strengths. When you have that equalizer with that forkball, it makes things difficult." With 11 saves through the team's first 36 games, Poboreco is on pace to tie or even break his team saves mark. The record isn't his primary motivating factor when he strolls out to the mound, but it would still be nice to have. It would mean that the team is still winning late in the season, and for Poboreco and Montgomery, wins are what it's all about. "As long as we get the opportunities to do so," Poboreco said of chasing the saves record, "hopefully I keep getting the chance, and hopefully we'll stay in rhythm and keep winning ball games." And another Explorer story, Claiborne takes weekend series from Explorers. The Claiborne Railroaders raced out to an early 6-0 lead on Sunday afternoon, and the Sioux City Explorers battled back to close the gap in late innings, but fell short as Claiborne took the deciding game of the three-game series 6-4. The Railroaders used a three-run home run by Chase Simpson in the top of the first to generate a quick 3-0 lead. In the second, it was Osvaldo Martinez's double that extended the lead, and Martinez then scored on a sacrifice fly to right to make it 5-0. Claiborne finished their scoring for the day in the third as Hunter Clannon scored on a John Nestor single, giving the Railroads a 6-0 lead. All six runs were charged to Zach Hedges, who also allowed 9 hits and 5 innings of work while walking and striking out 3. Mitch Gelfi whacked his first home run of the season to the opposite field, making it a 6-1 ball game. A Sebastian Zawada 2-out single in the sixth plated a run, and on the same play, Lane Milligan scored all the way from first after Zach Neerer bobbled the hit in left center, trimming the Claiborne lead down to 6-3. Austin Fairchild picked up the victory as he allowed 3 runs, 2 earned on 6 hits, walking 3 while striking out 6. The Explorers' best chance to finish off the comeback came in the seventh as they loaded the bases with 1 out. Nate Sampson reached and brought home a run on an error by Simpson at third to make it 6-4 and move the tying run into scoring position. But Nathaniel Rodriguez got Claiborne out of the bases loaded jam with a strikeout and a ground out. Sioux City outhit Claiborne 11-9, but both teams stranded 10 runners. Kyle Chavez delivered the save. After plunking the leadoff man in the ninth, he immediately got a double play and a fly ball to end the game. Sioux City will take an off day Monday before opening up a 3-game series with the Houston Apollos on Tuesday at 7:05 p.m. We'll now do a prep roundup. The Woodbury Central baseball team came out on top over Kingsley Pearson on Monday by a 3-1 score as the Wildcats dealt the Panthers their third loss of the season. Woodbury Central junior Carter Beal went 3-for-3 with 3 RBI in the game, while Will DeSanter had 2 RBI on a sacrifice fly and an RBI groundout. Kyan Schultzen got the win for the Panthers. Softball. Woodbury Central 7, Kingsley Pearson 3. The Woodbury Central softball team earned its 11th win of the season on Monday as the Panthers upset Kingsley Pearson by a 7-3 score. The Wildcats held a 1-run lead going into the bottom of the fifth and then played it 3 more runs to put the game out of reach for the Panthers. With the win, Woodbury Central improved to 11-17 while KP fell to 15-10. Sioux Center 13, Central Lyon George Little Rock 0. The Sioux Center softball team earned a solid victory on Monday night over Central Lyon as the Warriors took down the Mustangs 13-0. Tatum Schalbeck got the start for Sioux Center and went 3 innings while allowing just 1 hit. On offense, Willow Bleeker went 2-for-2 with a double and an inside-the-park home run. With the win, Sioux Center improved to 22-5, while CLGLR fell to 512. Bishop Heelan 10, Council Bluffs Jefferson 0. The Bishop Heelan softball team scored a pair of dominant wins on Monday over Council Bluffs Thomas Jefferson as the Crusaders took down the Yellow Jackets with scores of 10-0 and 17-1. In the first game, the Crusaders had 13 hits as a team. Senior Kyla McKayla and sophomore Grace Nelson each had 2 hits, while Nelson finished the game with 3 RBI. Junior pitcher Jocelyn Verzels got the win after striking out 5 batters over 6 innings while allowing just 3 hits. In Game 2, Heelan won by 16 runs as the team had 15 hits and reached on 3 errors by the Yellow Jackets defense. Junior Mariah Augustine had 3 hits and scored 3 runs, and senior Anessa Davenport finished with 3 RBI. McKayla got the win this time for Heelan, allowing 1 run on 3 hits with 1 strikeout and 3 innings of work. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, June 29th. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for listening.